this is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Welcome, everybody, to Sunday, November the 16th edition of Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. I got my buddy Matt Lynch here on the box, and there was a lot going on this week. We're going to go over some NCAA scores here in a second. I was watching football till literally when I went to bed last night. I was watching NCAA football in bed. Florida State tried to lose another game. They actually won it because the University of Miami, who outplayed them for the first half, pretty much in the second half looked like one of the worst college teams out there, and they ended up losing at the end of the game and not covering the point spread, which, you know, that's even worse as far as I'm concerned. but there were, you know, I had a decent day yesterday. There were some games. Georgia Tech is playing some great football right now. If you're an NCAA, you know, you always want to look for somebody that has the arrow pointing upward as opposed to pointing downward. University of Kansas. I was tweeting with a friend. I'm not going to drop names, but I was tweeting with a friend that went to UK, and he was at the game, and they were beating TCU pretty much most of the entire game and ended up losing by a touchdown because they gave up a punt return. Now, if you're the University of Kansas and you have one of the worst teams in college football, I mean, their record I think now is 1-9. If it's not 1-9, it's 1-10. But it's pretty bad. If you're at the University of Kansas, where Charlie Weiss took advantage of a really nice athletic director and somehow or another talked him into giving him a job, Charlie Weiss was, if you read Bill Parcells' book, you can find out what Charlie Weiss was like. I'm glad I didn't write the book because I don't know if I've got enough money to handle the attorneys. Fees for some of the stuff that Bill said, but Bill's going to say what's true. And when that Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells deal went down, when Bill Belichick took the Jets job for 24 hours and decided he didn't want it anymore, and ended up going to New England instead. Of course, Charlie Weiss went with him, even though he was on the staff for the Jets. And he basically did a 180 and kind of threw Parcells under the bus. And even if you throw Parcells under a bus, he ain't going to get hit by the bus. Trust me. There isn't anybody in pro football that's more respected than Bill Parcells, in my opinion.
You have more of a chance of damaging the bus.
Yeah, well, you will.
I mean, like a Redskins bus driver.
And getting tuna fish all over the bottom of the bus. But it's, anyway, he was at Kansas and he was horrible. Of course, he was at Notre Dame too, Charlie Weiss. And you got to remember, Charlie Weiss was a part of that, you know, group that were involved with Spygate in New England. And so was Romeo Crennel, who is defensive coordinator with an NFL team now and doing a pretty good job. I mean, Romeo's a decent coach. He's not great, but he's not terrible. He's not bad. He does okay. Listen, these guys, this is a boys' club. These guys just kind of jump around these 30 teams on a regular basis. And if you lose a job somewhere as a head coach, you're going to get picked up as a coordinator probably. If you lose a job as a coordinator somewhere, you're probably going to get picked up as a coordinator by a head coach who doesn't know enough guys to bring in. And that's kind of the way it is. We're going to have some great guests. We're going to have Clark Judge on late today, 11:30 half hour, whatever you want to call that. Clark will be on. I got Mike Wallace on today. I got Steve Buckhantz on today. As a matter of fact, did I tell you What time did I say we needed to call Buck? Wasn't it
next hour? Don't worry.
Oh, it's 11:05. That's right. Who's coming on the first hour? Do you remember?
No clue.
It's just at 10:30. I've got somebody coming on, and you know, I might even call my boy in Cleveland just to see if I'm losing my mind. If I'm going to take Brian Hoyer, I am releasing them. I'll go ahead and give you that one today. Don't play it for the house. Play it for China in the dining room. But I like Cleveland today because they're at home and they're playing somebody they should be able to destroy today. They should at least be able to beat them. There are some. Let me tell you, in the NFL right now, if you're not paying attention, and I'm sure most of the people who are listening to this show are paying attention, or there's really no reason to even be listening to me. If you like the NFL, you like listening to my show. If you like the NFL, follow me on Twitter at Bruce Hall Sports. I retweet the top guys in the country all day long, and I follow most of those guys. Most of those guys follow me. That way, I can direct message them. That's how you meet people. That's how you get people on your show. And you know, the whole idea in 2 hours is I've got about an hour and a half of real talk, and the rest of it we're selling. You know, we have advertisements and stuff, and you know, whatever you want to call them. Announcements, you know, whatever. But in that hour and a half, I want you guys to learn stuff. I mean, it's important to me that every day that when you listen to me, you hear something that you haven't heard before. You know, for example, you know, my play of the day. I'm not going to give it away right now because it's a little too early. I think we're going to go over that stuff in the first hour for a change. And then I'll at the end of the show, I got somebody on for about 20 minutes at 11:30. I want to say that's Clark Judge. And, you know, with Hall of Fame Network, that Clark Judge, that NFL insider Clark Judge, who lives in New York City and lives and breathes. And he's a big, big hockey fan. He's a big Montreal fan. I found out. He's a Hab fan, man. So,
They have hockey in Canada?
They have tons of hockey in Canada, and we have their weather. They gave us their weather, and they're keeping our hockey teams.
I just learned something today. See? You're successful.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you something. I read. You know what? I'm a big reader. If you hear newspapers in the background, that would be Bruce Hall, because I read so much. Like, when I come do the show at the studio at Matt's, I'm usually 2 hours early, and I'll end up, I do the same thing every week. I buy all these papers. I sit and I read and I read and I read and I listen. I tell you who I really like to listen to, except for they take a 2 hour show and they could do an hour show out of it because they talk a little bit, but I love Rodney Harrison. If you ever follow Rodney Harrison, I want to say he's on ESPN, and I don't even like to say that, but Rodney Harrison is a television personality. He was a great, great safety with the New England Patriots. Hard hitting guy. All those guys, extremely intelligent. And I listen to Safety Blitz on Sunday morning. So, I mean, you know, and don't get me wrong, I would like for you to listen to WFAS AM 1230. Whatever we got going on Sunday morning must be great. But if you want to listen to sports, turn it on Rodney Harrison on ESPN Radio is probably a good idea because he has a really good take on all the teams. Rodney's got to be early 40s, mid 40s, so he's not that far removed. He played until he was 37, 38 years old. That's how, and a lot of guys at safety aren't able to do that. Rodney was able to do that because he took care of his body and, God, he used to deal out some incredible hits.
No, 1 minute. What do you think? I have something important to say,
Matt,
I can't look you in
I
the face.
I thought Matt flipped me off, you know, like Rex Ryan. I was getting ready to fine you $50,000. By the way, the next fine that Rex Ryan, head coach of the New York Jets, gets will probably be somewhere in the vicinity of $200,000 because he is a habitual offender of behavior problems, the league said this week. You know, Woody's going to have to give him an extra $500,000 a year raise if he keeps him. He's probably not going to keep him, but he's going to have to give him a raise just to pay the fines, or he's going to have to pay the fines for him. You know, the games that we have today, just so you know. And by the way, I'm 2-0 already this week. You can find me on nhbowl.com, National Handicappers Bowl. I always use them every year. It's a service to follow people in the contest. NHBOWL.com. I'm going to go ahead and get this out of the way, then we'll be back. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. Hey, I'm still a realtor, been a realtor for almost 30 years. We'll be back in a minute with more Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. This is Bruce. I've got Mike Wallace, my buddy, on the line. Probably the best baseball guy I know and the guy that I always like to run everything by when I've got these crazy ideas about trades. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Bruce. What do you got? It's a hot stove season.
Yeah, it is.
Anything you can think up.
Yeah, let me tell you, I caught your show yesterday. Mike is a co-host of Nats Talk, and it might as well just be baseball talk because you guys talk about so much stuff. And yesterday you were talking about an event you went to when you saw Dallas Green, and you said you hadn't seen Dallas Green in years, and the first thing Dallas did was point at you and go, "Hey, there's Mike Wallace." You know, isn't it nice to know that you look the same as you did 35, 40 years ago?
Well, I'd like to say that, but the truth is he didn't recognize me at first because I hadn't seen him since 78.
Yeah, that's a while back right there, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we got a lot of stuff going on. They had the general manager's meetings in Arizona at the Biltmore Resort. It's not a hotel. It's a friggin' 1,000-acre place with two golf courses and all a spa and everything else. Place that I generally don't get a chance to play golf at during spring training because it's just a little bit out of my pocket price-wise. But not a lot got done because there's really not that many. You know, everybody knows who the free agents are. You know, they've already been offered the $15.3 million, you know, number that, you know, they could sign.
Qualifying offer.
Yeah, and basically what that's turned into when there's not a big market is none of them signed for that. Even last year, you know, Nelson Cruz turned down 14 and change, right? And he ended up signing an $8 million contract with the Baltimore Orioles and ended up hitting 40 home runs. And now he's already turned down that number again, that 15 number. I got a feeling this year Nelson's going to get probably at least 15, maybe more, in probably 2 or 3 years or so. What do you think? You think Nelly Cruz is worth that?
Oh, I thought the Baltimore Orioles got the deal of the season last year when they got Cruz for 1 year for less than $10 million. It was the deal of the season, Bruce. But it was only for 1 year. Nelson took advantage of it, and he's in a hitter-friendly park, and he hits 40. So he and Stanton were the only guys that did that this year. So he's going to get, like you said, probably 3 years, $45 million, maybe 3 years, $50
million. Yeah, I can see that happening. Nelly's, what, 30 years old? Maybe 31?
Sure, he's...
Yeah, he's not.
Listen, he's a good deal still. Well, that wasn't a fluke year he had in Baltimore. That's Nelson Cruz. He's a legit power-hitting outfielder for your team, or DH.
Yeah, the thing I like about Nelly is, you know, I watched him play in Texas. He seemed to carry a little bit more weight in Texas. Of course, he got in trouble doing steroids, obviously, and had to sit 50 games, I guess. I think it was just 50 games he sat. It might have been 100. But he ends up coming back, and he did a good job.
Yeah, well, that's why Baltimore got the deal of the season.
Right.
Because he was tainted with that, and that nobody was sure he was a legit power hitter without steroids. Well, I'm assuming he had to take several urine tests this season.
Yeah, every week.
Every minute. He still hit 40. So he proved that he can hit clean. He can hit with power. So that was the big albatross around his neck. And now that it's gone, I think somebody will give him that multi-year, multi-million-dollar contract.
Yeah, I think so too. There's also another guy that you and I know pretty well. I really know him pretty well because ever since my buddy Bruce Bochy has ended up, since he's been in San Francisco, Pablo was there like the year before as a rookie. And really, Pablo's best years have been, well, in 2009, Pablo had his best year by far. And as the years have progressed, the guy gets great. You know, the reason that everybody knows his name is because, hell, he was MVP of the World Series in 2002 with Detroit. He might as well have been MVP in 2000 against Texas. And this year.
Could have been MVP this year except for that guy Bumgarner.
Yeah, exactly. Bums, but anyway, the thing about Pablo is, if you look at his numbers, there are a dozen guys in the American and National League, and I can tell you who they are, and you know who they are, that have had comparable years to him this year, and they don't make any money.
But I know.
Go ahead.
You're going to have to pay for that season experience and that postseason performances, not only one MVP, but potentially three. So that's what somebody in – that's why I think to a contending team that is in need of a third baseman, DH, I think Pablo's your guy. He takes you over the top.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about it probably. I'm going to keep you on for a couple segments, Mike, if you can do it, because for some reason our phones weren't working and we were going to have you on right at the start of the show. But the thing I like about Pablo is he's a ball player. You know, the one thing Boch always told me about Pablo, he says Pablo's a freak. He said he just squares up everything when he wants to. He said he swings at bad pitches. We kind of get away from that. His walk strikeout ratio isn't horrible, but his on base percentage this year, I want to say, was 327, one of the, you know, like the lowest he's ever had. And you know, it's not like he is a cover picture for Health Magazine. He has a tendency to show up to camp 30, 40 pounds heavy. He hasn't done it in a couple years because they made a big deal about that. And he ended up showing up in great shape. Of course, he gains 20 to 30 pounds over the course of the season. A lot of guys can't keep weight on. Pablo can't keep it off because he just likes to eat. You know, he's one of those guys that just loves carbs. And, you know, his brother was cooking for him for a while. His brother's a hell of a chef, supposedly. And that's one. And his brother does hang with him on a regular basis during the season and lives with him in San Francisco. So, you know, that's how he kind of keeps his weight down, because his brother won't let him get away with murder. His brother won't let him eat real late at night.
That's because he's his brother's meal ticket, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
No pun intended.
Exactly. He went through a pretty nasty divorce, so I think that has a lot to do with why he's trying to get all this money too. Hey,
yeah.
Now other guys that we're looking at. I mean, think about it for a second. You know, Nelly Cruz is one of the big guys. There's a lot of pitchers out there right now. And by the way, this Giancarlo Stanton thing, what do you think about that? $320 million for, what, 10 years, 12 years or something?
If they give me an out in 5 years and a complete no-trade clause, I think he'd be foolish not to take it if it's accurate.
Yeah. Well, you know, Lori, what do you think about the owner in Miami? I mean, this is the guy that basically, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of friends outside the league. I mean, some of these owners kind of all stick together, but this guy did some strange things when he, you know, got the public money for the building of the stadium. Then they weren't drawing at all. Then he got rid of all of his guys except Stanton. I mean, Stanton was like the only guy he kept except for a couple of really good young pitchers.
Well, he didn't owe Stanton any money. He owed the rest of those guys big bucks.
Yeah.
You know, Burley, he owed big bucks, too.
Right.
All those free agent signings that he made to get into the new stadium, when they went bust and he unloads them, the only guy he keeps is Stanton. It was because Stanton was still within that four-year window where he could pay him the minimum.
Yeah, you know, well, of course, Stanton gets hit in the face, what, in August? And he's out the rest of the year. And what a lot of people are saying, and think about this for a second, you could write one hell of a story, a movie, a screenplay about this. Unless, there's got to be language in that contract somewhere, if they are in actuality putting this thing together, that if he doesn't play a minimum of 2 years because of health reasons or what mental reasons or whatever, that they're out of the contract. Because what if he goes up to the plate and he's not the same hitter because he's scared to death of getting hit in the face?
Well, I think that if they could prove that he had, you know, if he has a dramatic drop off in performance, I think that people will know almost automatically that it's because he got hit in the face. And then you'll see guys start to
throw in on him.
Sort of, you know, home in on him to see if he's actually flinching.
Right.
So, but that's one you never know about, Bruce. I mean, that's why I think it's such a wild contract to start, not only for the length of it, but for the amount of it, but because he got hit in the face in August and misses the rest of the season, and we're talking broken bones, teeth knocked out. He took a serious shot in the face.
That was ugly. That was one of the ugliest things I've ever seen. And you know what was amazing was he never lost consciousness, and evidently he was, you know, he never went anywhere. He traveled with the team some of the time.
Right.
When he was ready to. I mean, he seems like a really good kid. I look at his body, Mike, though, and it just screams of some kind of high-tech PED, doesn't it?
I don't know, but I'll tell you what. I was thinking about this yesterday. Remember when they called Randy White years ago when he was at Maryland?
Yeah.
That's what Giancarlo is. If he is bigger, and he is absolutely cut. He's got, you know, big shoulders and a small waist and very muscular legs. He is, you know, like you said, he's almost a caricature. But there's no body fat on him. But he's one of the true power hitters. And think about it. There are only two guys last year that hit 40.
Yeah, and you know what? That tells me one of two things. That tells me that the pitching got a little bit better. And I think it every year, honestly, Mike.
I'd buy that. You know,
I do too.
The statistics will bear that out.
I do too. You know, I'm sitting here looking at the guys that are the free agents.
Right.
You know, it's not a real long list. I mean, it really isn't. Certain catcher for Russell Martin is going to, you can tell it's Sunday, and you're right. I'm talking about Russell Wilson. Russell Martin's going to get paid. Pittsburgh didn't want him. You know, they don't have the money to pay him. And he's going to end up getting a great contract. There's talk he may end up back in Los Angeles with the Dodgers. Hey, Mike, can you hold on for me for a minute? And we'll be back with another segment. Mike Wallace, former Major League pitcher and co-host of Nats Talk. We'll be back in a minute with more of Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
I'm on the phone right now with Mike Wallace, former Major League pitcher, former Madison Warhawk, and one of the best baseball people I know. Mike, I pulled up the free agents here. You know, one of the most interesting things, and I know you know this guy because you've been around for a while. AJ Burnett turned down a qualifying offer to sign for a substantial amount less to be with a team that's in contention, the Pirates as opposed to the Phillies. What'd you think about that?
That's exactly what he did. I didn't think that he turned down a qualifying offer. I think he turned down a player's option for 12 point something.
That's
something
right.
Close to, you know, a lot more than 8.7 he took from the Pirates. But, you know, Burnett's at the point in his life where how rich can you get?
Yeah, he wants a ring.
And that's exactly correct. And he doesn't see the Phillies contending next year, and he does see the Pirates staying, you know, in contention.
Yeah, I got a chance to see him throw a little bit this year. He did a good
job. Yeah, did I.
He threw his off-speed stuff was exceptional. His fastball's not the same. AJ's the kind of guy that's got to keep the ball down. And he's got to be 37, 38 years old. I mean, but he still goes out there and competes, and I really like him. You know, Melky Cabrera, Asdrubal Cabrera, who the Nats signed this year to play second base through the playoffs, he's still out there and hasn't, you know, signed a contract yet. A lot of people think he's going to get a lot of money. My people in Cleveland aren't crazy about him. Now, they got to see him play every year for several years, and they weren't that high on him offensively. They like him defensively. He's a real good defensive second baseman, but the Nationals have a good defensive second baseman. They just need him to hit, not Desi, the other guy. You know who I'm talking about.
Espinoza.
Yeah. I don't hate Espinoza. In my opinion, Espinoza is one of those kids. You and I both have coached a lot of baseball. He can't leave the high fastball alone. From the left side. All you got to do is throw him something around the letters with one or two strikes. And if it's a fastball, he's looking for it and he's swinging at it and he never hits it. Never.
Well, you know, he's easy to get out when he hits left-handed. And I would be surprised if the Nats went into spring training with Espinoza as their first number one second baseman. I think either through a trade or a free agent signing, they'll have somebody that will probably be listed as the starting second baseman before Espinoza. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Espinoza move this winter.
Yeah, I see that too. The thing I like about Espy, I mean, from a Nats standpoint, we're on the phone right now with Mike Wallace of Nats Talk with Masson Sports Television. Mike is a former major league pitcher and a great baseball mind. Melky Cabrera went to Toronto, and you know he had a good first half. Now he had a pretty tainted little stay out in San Francisco in 2002. When you know he carried him the first half of the season, very similar to the way Michael Morse did this year. And then he was, you know, once he went down to the tune of 100 games, he was done. And he left with some bad feelings there because he didn't even say goodbye to a lot of the players. And I was kind of glad to see him gone. He's available. Callaspo with the A's is available. You got a guy like Alexi Casilla, you know, second baseman with the Orioles is available. You get to see a lot of these guys from Baltimore regularly because you guys with Mass and you guys, you know, take care of the Nats. And listen, let's give Matt Williams some congratulations too. I like Matt. Matt's a good kid. I call him a kid because he's 10 years younger than me. But Matt, in my opinion, was a great baseball player. He had a great competitive spirit, and he's brought something to the Nats. He's just brought a work ethic, hasn't he, Mike?
Well, he's a grinder.
Yep.
He never was a pretty boy. He always played with a dirty uni. He's pretty much a nose to the grindstone every day guy. Very even keeled. Kept everything pretty much contained and compartmentalized in the clubhouse. He did a very nice job. He did not have a good playoff series. And I think that it was probably a huge learning experience for him. But I'm with you. I'm a Matt Williams guy.
Yeah, he ended up getting a National League Manager of the Year. He finished first. Crazy son of a gun from Pittsburgh finished second, and Boach got third. And of course, they voted. The writers vote on it. You know, the American Baseball Writers Association. Sure. And you and I both know some of those guys. You can take them with a grain of salt, half of them. But you know, the thing of it is they do the vote. At the end of the regular season. At the end of regular season, the Nats had the best team in the National League on paper.
Absolutely.
So he deserved
the
award.
Some of my friends talked to Steve Balboni, who scouts for the Giants now, during the World Series. And Balboni told them the Nationals were the best team in the National League. And I'm total agreement of that with that the Nationals, over the course of 162 games, had the best season of any National League club.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, with the exception, and really, if you think about it, the Nationals players were all, you know, they had good chemistry, too, because they played together for a while. When Ramos, of course, the only newcomer was the backup catcher from Tampa Bay, who you and I both like a lot.
Lobaton.
Yeah, I love him as a receiver. He's a decent left-handed stick. But, you know, when Ramos was in there, that was all their guys, you know? I mean, they had Bryce Harper in left field when he was healthy. They had Jason Worth in right. I mean, you know, those guys were good. You know, they had a great team.
They didn't have any long losing streaks.
Nope.
They were very consistent. It was just a shame that it was one of the coldest teams I've ever seen in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because Rendon hit, but he wasn't driving the ball. He was hitting, you know, mostly singles and an occasional gapper. And Harper hit some, you know, had some pop.
Yeah.
But other than those two, everybody hit a dollar.
Yeah, they looked tight.
Awful.
Yeah, they looked tight to me a little bit. They were, you know,
yeah, which just surprised me. They were there in 12. Most of those guys were there in 12.
Yeah,
so they shouldn't have been tight.
Yeah, they ended up, you know, I mean, losing a five game. Wasn't that a five game series they lost to?
No, they lost in
seven.
Four.
Oh, they lost that. Okay, so that was in seven.
Nationals lost in four.
But I mean, it was a five game series, best out of five. And the thing of it is that, you know, and you know how I am. I mean, that's the only time I don't root for the Nats is when they play San Francisco.
Right.
I mean, that was that whole thing was just crazy. And you know, to this day, I honestly believe that it would have been a different story probably if he'd have just left Jordan Zimmerman in the game. And that's just because that's where I come from. I watched the at bat and Jordan didn't lose anything in that at bat where he walked that kid before him. I mean, he was painting the outside and inside corner. He wasn't getting a call. I would have gone out there and basically made the umpire come out, and I might have gotten tossed, but I was going to let him know in no uncertain terms that it was not a good time to start getting stage fright and squeezing my guy. He's throwing freaking.
That might not have been the best time to bark at the umpire, but if he'd have gone out there and I saw him do it with Fister earlier in the season, where you go out, you got this guy, yeah, he's mine, and then run off the mound quickly, seconds. That place would have exploded, and Zimmerman would have finished the game on. If he had nothing left, he would have won it on a motion.
Yep. Well, he had.
Because the place would have went crazy. You know that, Bruce.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who it was, Mike, that said that this week. It's a former pitcher in the major leagues, you know, somebody that's our age. And what he said was, hey, when you're in the playoffs, you can pitch every third game if you have to because you got that much in the tank going. I don't know if I agree with that anymore because things are a little different now than they were. But, no, he had at least another batter or two in him. There's no question. And
No doubt in my mind.
And like what I said before, that minute, he was the best pitcher in the world. Cause
he was dominant. I think the long foul ball – maybe panicked Matt a little bit.
Could
you know,
have.
That I'm not going to leave him in and let him get juiced by number three, Posey.
Yeah, no, I agree. Hey, listen, let's got about a minute left, and I can't thank you enough for coming on. Let's talk real quick too about Cy Young Award. You know, I think pitchers should win Cy Young Awards. I think position players should win MVPs. How do you feel about that, Mike?
I think that if you think that the pitcher was the most important in the MVP, you should be able to vote for him.
Okay.
Now, you got to admit, it doesn't happen every day because 68 was the last time it happened.
Right.
And was Kershaw that dominant? This, once again, is voted before the playoffs start.
That's right.
Was Kershaw the most dominant player?
Absolutely.
I think if Stanton hadn't have gotten hit in the face and he ends up with 40-plus, then I think that he might have had a chance.
I think you're right.
Stanton didn't hit. He didn't get 40 this year. He had 30-some when he got hit.
Hey, listen. Hey, Mike, we got to run. But listen, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. That was phenomenal. Mike Wallace with Nats Talk on Masson Sports Television. And, Mike, listen, you have a good one, and I can't wait to have you on soon. We're going to have some free agent movement here in the next couple of weeks. We'll have you back on.
Yeah, the general manager's meeting could be exciting.
Yeah, I can't.
I mean, the winter meetings.
Yeah, I think I might even have to sneak over there. You take care of yourself, partner.
All right, Bruce.
All right, Mike. Thank you very much. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. I'm a realtor, and we'll be back in a minute on AM 1230 News Talk, 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. We're going to go straight into football now. I want to talk briefly, if I can. This is going to be a little bit of a short segment right now, but I want to talk a little bit about what happened yesterday. Mississippi State, Alabama was dominating early. They end up holding on. They win 25-20. Mississippi State scored kind of a worthless touchdown at the end of the game to lose 25-20. They were number one in college football's playoff top 25. The Oregon Ducks didn't play. They were number two. Florida State comes back and wins again. They're 10-0 now. They beat Miami in Miami. Where the Dolphins play, actually. That place was packed. It was a great game. But, you know, in my opinion, they didn't win it. Miami lost it. And Miami at the time was 6-3. Now they're 6-4, and they're just an also-ran in the ACC. But Florida State's probably going to be number one since Oregon didn't play. I would say Oregon's going to be 3 or 4. TCU beats Kansas, but they barely beat them. Alabama, who was number five, is going to push right into the top four, maybe number two. Arizona State played Oregon State. I haven't gotten a final on that. They were playing Washington State late last night. I assume they won. If they didn't, they're toast. Baylor didn't play. Ohio State beats Minnesota in a, you know, they were ahead the whole game. The greatest thing about the Minnesota game was their head coach eating an ice cream bar on the sidelines. Look like a Dove bar. At least he's got good taste. Big old fat guy who's their head coach was eating ice cream on the sidelines at halftime.
Oregon State beat Arizona State 35-27.
Well, so Arizona State, like, you know, a friend of mine asked me yesterday why I didn't like them yesterday. I said I didn't trust their coach. Guess what? I was right. I didn't have them. I did have Miami. It was a release, and I lost it right at the end of the game. Alabama, I released in a three-team teaser special. They cover that because they're minus 10 and they win. All they had to do was win the game. Auburn played Georgia. I was all over Georgia early in the day, got off of them, but I released Georgia to several good friends. And Georgia wins big time in that game. They won by like 35, 40 points. You probably got it in front of you, Matt. They beat all the Auburn Tigers. Auburn's done for the year, in my opinion. But they're not done. They can beat Alabama and make life miserable for the Crimson Tide. Ole Miss didn't play. UCLA didn't play. What was the score, Matt? What was the final score of that Michigan State-Maryland game? They were up.
Michigan 37, Maryland 15.
Yeah, they ended up covering. That was actually they pushed. That was a 12-point game. Oh, wait, 37-15? They covered. Mm-hmm. It was a 12-point game. They won by 22. That's pretty easy stuff. Michigan State is a team that will move up. They could move up as high as number 7 or 8 with all these teams that didn't play. You got Kansas State didn't play. Arizona beat Washington 27-26. Boy, that was a hell of a game. Georgia's moved up, obviously. But the bad news was that their running back for the University of Georgia got injured again, and he was taken to the hospital. And that's bad news because that was the kid that got in all the trouble for signing footballs and autographs and all that stuff. Nebraska gets crushed by a guy. And let me just say this. Congratulations to Melvin Gordon, the running back for the University of Wisconsin. He broke LaDainian Tomlinson's record in college of 406 yards by rushing for 408 yards yesterday on the nation's number 20 rushing defense. Nebraska gave up 581 rushing yards yesterday. It's all in your schedule, people. It's a big difference between playing Wisconsin and Prairie View or somebody. LSU, they lose. They get crushed by Arkansas last night. I want to say that was 17-0. Once again, people called me, why aren't you on LSU? You were all over them last week. Guess what? That's why I wasn't on them, because how can you get up for Arkansas when you let one get away last week like they did at home? Notre Dame, I love this. They get beat 43-40. I turned the game on. Literally, late in the fourth quarter, when Notre Dame had the game and all they had to do was run out the clock, they fumble the football. Northwestern goes down, and a baseball player kicks the field goal. Seriously. Yeah, I don't think he was their number one kicker at the start of the season. They were telling the story about it. He kicks a field goal to tie it up, and they win in overtime. Same kid kicked a 41-yard field goal. And I got to tell you.
Sorry, I thought you were trying to see if I was paying attention or not.
No, this was
like, wait, what?
No, this was at Notre Dame. At Notre Dame. So it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I hate Kelly. You know, I said all along, I don't like the guy. I don't like the program. And I used to watch Notre Dame football every Sunday morning, you know, because it was on.
It's the only game on the four networks.
Well, Lindsey Nelson used to come on Channel 5, Metro Media TV. And then we only had four stations at the time, and we would watch Notre Dame football.
Three in your
and
age.
It was really cool because it was like watching film, because they didn't waste anything. It was like they'd show the play, then they'd show the next play, then it was like watching film. And that's how we grew up loving football, watching Notre Dame football. I still, you know, I liked Notre Dame when Eric Parsegian was there. I didn't like him when Dan Devine was there. I liked him when Lou Holtz was there. They've gone through too many damn coaches, in my opinion, in the past 30 years. This guy's a bum, in my opinion. I don't like him. And I've got my own reasons. I think that when that kid died on a day when they were taking film of practice in 60-mile-an-hour, 70-mile-an-hour gusts, and the kid texted to somebody on his phone, I'm going to die. And guess what? He did. And this guy kept his job. Are you kidding me? Look, you're responsible for the safety of your kids, whether they're players, managers, technicians, or people, or a kid that's just trying to make, you know, $5 an hour in work study taking film of your practice. When the wind's blowing that hard, go indoors and do something. Don't be stupid. You're stupid, Kelly. You're stupid. Sorry. If you're a Notre Dame alum, My name's Bruce Hall. I'm easy to find. Clemson gets crushed by my play of the day, Georgia Tech. I love Georgia Tech. They're playing so good. Paul Johnson is the head coach of Georgia Tech. For you people who don't know who Paul Johnson is, he was the guy that was at Navy for, what, 12 years, 13 years, about 15, 20 years ago. And Navy had incredible teams. He runs the triple option. It's like the wishbone. I mean, they have, and they have, by the way, a running back got 6 touchdowns yesterday. And he's going to end up breaking an NCAA record for touchdowns probably next week or the week after. My Duke Blue Devils, you know, David Cutcliffe's my buddy. I love David Cutcliffe. They got beat, and it's the only time I've ever seen them do something I didn't think they should do. They played for a field goal and missed the field goal. And I thought Cut should have just gone into the end zone because there was plenty of time left. You know what I mean? I didn't want to give the ball back to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech beat, if you remember, they beat Ohio State the second game of the season at Ohio State, Virginia Tech. So Virginia Tech's not a bad ball club, but they've lost, gosh, I don't even know how many games they've lost. They might have lost 5 games already. Georgia Tech was number 22. They're going to move up. They're going to move up to like 16, 17 for sure. Utah played at Stanford late. They end up winning in overtime. Beat Stanford Cardinal. The Stanford Cardinal loses. They haven't lost 2 straight games since 2009. They get beat by Utah late last night, at least Eastern time. Wasn't late that late at Stanford. Texas A&M and Missouri. I don't even know what the final was. Matt can find that for me. Texas A&M, of course, the week before had a great game. Missouri, they're hot and cold. Neither of those teams are going to make much of a difference. But in Ohio State, of course, beats Minnesota, who was ranked 25th.
Looking for it now.
Yeah, Dak Prescott, for those of you that watched that Mississippi State-Alabama game, Dak Prescott kind of proved to everybody that he is a lot like Tim Tebow. He can run a little bit. He doesn't throw all that well. He doesn't have very good feet. It looked, there was a time there in the third quarter, late in the third quarter, where it looked like Mississippi State was getting some momentum, and it looked to me like the Alabama defense was gassing pretty hard. But then Alabama put it together in the fourth quarter, and they held them off. But that was one hell of a game. You know, it's this time of the year when you get to see that college football really is a lot of fun to watch. I don't care I think sooner or later they're not going to be wearing headgears, but I will still go to the games and it will still be just as exciting as it is without it. Now, here's the bad news. Those kids that are wearing the dreadlocks, that have those long dreadlocks, if they're not wearing a helmet, guess what? People are going to be grabbing those dreadlocks more than they do now. They're going to, hey, come back here. It's like, but the speed of some of these guys. There was a kid named Dorsett who was a wide receiver for the University of Miami. They said he's been timed in 4.19 in the 40-yard dash. That's ridiculously fast.
By the way, Texas A&M lost 27-34.
That was a big game if you were from Missouri or if you were from College Station, Texas. Anyway, we got a couple of. When we get back, we'll have Steve Buckantz on from the Washington Wizards, and we're going to be talking NBA basketball. We'll be back in a minute on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were. And we let him off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're trying to get Steve Buckhantz on the line. We're having some phone miscommunication, so Bruce is writing the number down, because I don't think he wants his number put on the air.
You know. Definitely not this one. Hey, I'm gonna give him a prelude. That's 703 area code, right, by the way. Now we're gonna have Buck on. I've known Buck since when we were in high school. Steve has been. He started out with Metro Media 5. He was Channel 5 sports anchor for years in DC. Then he took a job with Comcast Sportsnet. And he's been covering the Washington Wizards. Shoot, he was covering them when they were the Bullets. Pretty sure he was still covering them when it, yeah, they were the Bullets before they were the Wizards. That was the reason that the Washington Wizards changed their name to the Wizards from the Bullets was because the owner of the Washington Bullets, Abe Polin, was anti-violence. At least that was the story that they had. I think they just wanted a new brand, and they got it. And it really wasn't a very good brand. And what they've managed to do since then is they're bringing back the old Washington Bullets colors, red, white, and blue, because the Wizards' colors were like, you know, a weird colored blue and kind of gray. I mean, they were goofy looking. And, you know, if you're thinking about branding yourself as something, Wizards is too much, in my opinion, like, you know, the brand for another company. You got it? Okay. So anyway, we're going to have Steve on, but the Wizards have started out this year 7-2. They have the best record that the Washington NBA team has had since the mid-70s. And to me, that's incredible. I almost went to a ball game last night. I literally almost bought tickets online, and they were relatively expensive for a change. Generally speaking, they are not that expensive. They just aren't. And this year, it's getting a little bit different. If you take a peek at, We got Steve Buckhantz on the line. Buck, sorry about that. We were trying to get through to you. We're having a hard time getting through to you. Hey,
okay.
I was telling everybody about, of course, you've been on the show before, and we're talking to Steve Buckhantz with Comcast Sportsnet. Am I correct?
Yes.
You know, I have so many friends with Comcast Sportsnet now. Andy Baggerly, who does a lot of San Francisco Giants stuff, he's like their number one guy out in San Francisco. As a matter of fact, if you're ever going to talk to anybody about baseball, he's the guy. Of course, Feldy's with them now. Out in San Francisco.
Is.
I talked to Dave Feldman more now than I did when he was here. You know, but Steve, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I'm not going to ruin this for you, and I've already done the lead in. Tell me about this great Washington Wizards team and the kind of records they're breaking. Their record, they're 7-2, and take it from there.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'd anoint them quite yet, but they're solid and they're very deep, and they're only going to get a little deeper this week when Bradley Beal comes back, and that's really what everyone's been waiting for. They've been sort of, treading water until he gets back,
right,
and doing a pretty good job. Now, you know, the good news is they've won the games that they're supposed to win, and they're 7-2. The two losses were against good teams, and they weren't particularly good games. They lost by 12 points in Miami on opening night, and then they lost badly in Toronto by 19 points. And so the teams they've beaten collectively, I think only one of them has a winning record. Having said that, they still, you know, are beating teams that they're supposed to beat, and sometimes that doesn't always work out the way it should. So you have to do what you have to do, especially when you don't have one of your best players on the team, and you do that until he comes back. And he's supposed to start practicing tomorrow and may be available to play, depending on how he does in practice and how he feels, may be available to play by Friday night when they host LeBron James and the Cavaliers. So they've been solid, Bruce. Last night their bench was fantastic, and that's really, to me, the most pleasing thing that I've seen so far this season. I mean, John Wall's played well, and Gortat's solid, and all of those guys. We've seen Otto Porter get his game going. But last night, in terms of having Chris Humphreys come off the bench and do what he did, and Rasul Butler and Otto Porter and Andre Miller and Kevin Serafin, that's what they said this team was deep to begin with, and that's what they meant when they said that, and it showed last night. And if they can get that kind of play from guys like Humphreys throughout the year, and then, you know, who knows what Wall and Beal will like when Beal comes back, will be like, they could be a pretty good team.
You know, we're talking to Steve Buckhantz with Comcast Sportsnet, the voice of the Washington Wizards. I was telling everybody back when I really was a big fan was in the 60s and 70s, of course, when they were going, when they were the Washington Bullets. And, you know, I told everybody on the show a little bit about the background and how the owner of the Apollon ended up changing the name to the Wizards because of his anti-violence, and he thought bullets left a bad image. But one thing I do, I can't wait to get down there to see, they are bringing the red, white, and blue back a little bit, aren't they?
Well, the red, white, and blue is back, and that's, you know, their uniforms have red, white, and blue. So that's not going to change a whole lot. All the teams that play on Christmas Day will wear a slightly different jersey. It really isn't much different other than that. The back of it has the first name of the player on it, and the Wizards play on Christmas Day in New York, so you'll see that. But, you know, they brought back their red, white, and blue jersey, so it's as close to the old jersey pretty much as it's going to get, without a few things here and there. They still use their own logo, which is the DC, the monumental sports logo, and then obviously the Wizards logo. And I don't know if that will ever change. We'll have to wait and see, but that's not an easy process to do. But suffice it to say, for now they're the Wizards, and that's what they're going to be. But those of us who remember those old days have fond memories of, and I remember every day because I sit next to Phil Chenier, and he played in those days, so it's kind of neat.
I saw Phil play one of the first games. Wasn't he? Did he play in Baltimore first, didn't he?
Yes, one year, I believe.
They used to play in Baltimore. I used to just go there and see Earl Monroe play back when they were the Baltimore Bullets.
Sure, and at the old Civic Center.
And I'm telling you, Phil Chenier, I want to say, did he go to Cal? He's from a... He played at a college, but he ended up being 19. I want to say he was 19 years old or 20, a really young 20, like Bryce Harper, when he started playing in the NBA. And he had an incredible jump shot. He could go to the hole like nobody's business, and he played great defense. I loved Phil. He looks great now.
He played at Cal Berkeley. Grew up in Berkeley area. And he was the very first, what they called at the time, hardship case that came out of the NBA. He came out after 3 years. And now guys come out early all the time, but he was the very first one, and they called it a hardship case, and they let him come out. And there was talk that he was going to be drafted by Chicago, but he ended up getting drafted by the Bullets. And, yes, he came to Baltimore first, and he played with those guys, and then obviously they made the move. There was a transition year between Baltimore and Washington where they played a good deal of their games at Cole Fieldhouse, and they were actually called the Capital Bullets in between the Baltimore Bullets and the Washington Bullets for 1 year, and then after that they became the Washington Bullets, and they played at the Cap Center. But he had a fabulous jumper. It was sweet. It was just, you know, shoulder square, elevation, perfect follow-through. It was a gorgeous jump shot. And he was on the championship team in 78. He was injured. He had back surgery. But he was on that squad with all those guys. And he was a three-time All-Star.
At the time that Phil, your partner, we're talking to Steve Buckhantz with Comcast Sportsnet, the voice of the Y. He and Phil Chenier, how long have you been together with Phil?
Well, Phil's been doing it 32 years, and this is my 18th year.
That's incredible. Let me tell you, Chenier, when he came out, was, you know, back then there weren't 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", point guys. If you had a point guard that was 6'5", You had a pretty tall point guard. I remember when Kevin Porter, remember Kevin Porter? When he was the point guard for the Wizards, he might have even been a point guard for the Bullets for a short period. Yeah, he was with the Bullets.
Yeah, he was with the Bullets.
He was from like St. Joe's or somewhere, or St. Peter's. He was like 6 feet tall. And he was like tiny compared to a lot of those guys. But the thing I remember about Chenier is the way he could bring the ball up and down the court. He was really a two, but he could be a one anytime he wanted to because he had that good of ball skills. He was fun.
Yeah, he handled it pretty well. And he his fundamentals were great. And the way he, you know, he reminded me a little bit of some of these guys today in the way he would come off screens.
Right.
He could come off screens and go straight up and hit the jump shot. So he was great, and through him, obviously, I've gotten to know some of these other guys that go back to our days, Bruce, of growing up and watching these players, specifically two guys who, you know, made a huge impact on all of us. Walt Frazier, who does the color for the New York with Mike Breen, and
Breen.
We see Clyde several times a year. And then the other who really gets me excited is Earl Monroe, who, when I was growing up, that was my role model, my idol. And because of Phil, who knows all these guys very well, I've gotten to meet these other dudes on a regular basis. And it's just been, you know, fascinating for me. And one of the great stories I'd like to tell was last summer, summer before this past, we had a preseason game in Baltimore. We had one this year, too.
Right.
Summer before last, we played the Knicks, and it was at the Civic Center, or what they call the Civic Arena now. And of course, we're in the press room getting ready for the game, and Walt Frazier's in there because he's doing the game for New York TV.
Yeah.
So Walt and Phil are speaking, and they're reminiscing about the old games at the old Civic Center. And Frazier's phone rings, and it's Earl Monroe on the phone. And he wanted to call, and the three of them started talking about the old games at the Baltimore Civic Center and when they used to play each other. And as an innocent bystander, I'm sitting there privy to this conversation and just the hair standing up on the back of my neck. I mean, it was one of the great things I ever witnessed. Three legends talking about some of the greatest games that were ever
unbelievable.
Played.
Hey, Buck, can you hold on for another segment since it took us a while to get you? Are you good for one more segment? Thanks, Steve. We'll be back with Steve Buckantz in a minute on News Talk 1230 WFAS. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. See you in a minute.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation anytime by calling 240-317-7294. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back with Steve Buckantz with Comcast SportsNet, the voice of the Washington Wizards. Almost said Bullets. You know what? You can almost get away with saying Bullets and nobody's going to get mad at you.
You know, when we first started, it was a challenge, and we used to penalize each other, Phil and I, whoever said it. And now, not only do we sometimes slip up, but sometimes I just even say it on purpose because I don't think there's as much shock value to saying it as there was before. Before, when you said it, people said, "Oh, you slipped up," kind of like with the Hornets and the Bobcats.
Sure.
Now.
It could be a drinking game now, right?
Yeah. But now I think sometimes when I'm doing a promo or whatever, and I'll say, you know, for all of you Wizards/Bullets fans who remember this day, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong in saying that. Everybody knows who they are and who they were, and it's not that big a deal.
Now, listen, I'd be remiss to my listening audience in Westchester County, Rockland County, all the boroughs in Manhattan and even down south to Newark, if I didn't talk a little bit about the Knicks and the Brooklyn Nets. It's so hard for me to say Brooklyn Nets, to be honest with you. What, now, Brooklyn's still got a decent team, right? Didn't they fire a coach not too long ago?
Yeah, Yeah. They
who was
they
it?
They did fire coach.
It was your boy
Jason Kidd.
Yeah. One of the best players I ever saw. That didn't seem to work out quite well as well as a coach. What do you think?
Which is interesting because they made the playoffs, you know, and they had a good team.
That's who people were starting to go to see. And the great thing about Brooklyn is, if you know anything, and I'm sure you already know this because you go up there all the time, these guys in Brooklyn, people are moving into Brooklyn. They're leaving Manhattan in droves and moving into Brooklyn because it's cheaper. And really, it's a nice place to live. I mean, there's a lot of restaurants. There's a lot of stuff to do. And it's happening. The Nets, they had some players, and they still have some players, don't they?
They have some excellent players. The Eastern Conference is really, while you may not want to stack it up team for team against the West, and the general consensus is that the Western Conference is stronger, and it may be, the East is going to be a dogfight. Because when I say that, I mean amongst the East to get into the playoffs, and only eight teams make it. And that's because you look at these teams that people either don't give enough credit to, don't give enough publicity to, or simply discount. They're going to be there battling, and Brooklyn is one of those teams. So, I mean, if you start listing who you think the top teams in the Eastern Conference are going to be, and I'm not saying this is the exact order, but you start looking at teams like Cleveland and Chicago and Toronto and Miami and Charlotte and Washington and Atlanta and Detroit, and you have to have Brooklyn on that list. There's no question about it. So it's going to be I think it's going to be a real battle to see who the last few teams are to make the playoffs, and nobody's guaranteed. I mean, people pick, for instance, Washington to be, you know, maybe the third or fourth best team in the East, along with Toronto.
Right.
I don't think there's any guarantee that that's going to happen, because we don't really know how good Charlotte's going to be, and I think they're going to be very good. And we don't really know how good Atlanta's going to be, because they got Al Horford back, and I think they're going to be very good. And we've sort of just kind of glanced over Brooklyn and looked at the way they're playing. I think they're going to be very good. I didn't mention the Knicks, obviously. I mean, there are a few teams that you don't mention, and those would be Boston and Philadelphia and New York. But you never know what New York can do. They haven't played well lately, but you just never know. So there are a lot of teams in the East that are going to battle right to the very end, and I think Brooklyn is definitely one of those teams. They're a good ball club.
You know, every time I seem to make it down to a ball game in D.C., we're always playing Toronto. And I can't remember the last time we beat Toronto. They have a good ball club.
Well, the last time the Wizards beat Toronto was last season in a triple overtime game. And it was one of the first times they had won in Toronto in a while. So that game was on the road. And Toronto has a fabulous ball club. And between Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, they're really, really good. But they also have some other players. But they're a solid group of guys. And they just give everybody fits. And they beat the Wizards by 19 almost 2 weeks ago, and it wasn't real pretty. So, you know, if you're listing the top three teams in the East right now, I would say Cleveland, Chicago, and Toronto, if everybody's able to stay healthy. And when I say everybody, I'm generally talking about Derrick Rose. But right now I think Toronto is a very, very good team.
Let me ask you this: What is going to happen to the Knicks? Are the Knicks ever going to figure it out? Are they ever going to be able to redo that team? Because, you know, they underwent a lot of changes, not only within the Knicks organization, obviously, where there's been incredible changes, but before that, even with Madison Square Garden management. How long do you think it's going to take the Knicks to come out of this hole?
I think the most immediate problem was created a few years ago with the salary cap situation and how that was probably not handled in the wisest way. And it sort of has come back to bite them in the last few years. I believe that it won't take as long as you might think to turn around. I mean, if any team can turn around from a bad situation, it would be a team like New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, the teams that have the ability to make things happen and the kind of teams that free agents want to come and play to, play with. But like I said, because of the salary cap and what they did initially, that really hurt that squad. Now, obviously, they were able to re-sign Carmelo, and that's huge because he's a great player. But I believe that if a team can turn things around, and I think New York is that team, then they will, and it'll happen probably sooner than we think. But right now, it's just surprising to see them in, I won't say disarray, but in a situation where they're not able to play consistent basketball. Now, will Phil Jackson be able to change that? He's brought the triangle offense in there, and they're trying to free Carmelo up a little bit using that offense, and I think it's worked for the most part. But they have to be more consistent, and it'll help them a lot, to get their point guard back, and they've been injured too, so. They're going to be a better team, and I think that they'll turn it around quicker than we probably think.
Well, with the division, it looks like that the Wizards are in. They look like, right now at least, they look like a slam dunk for the playoffs for sure. Let me ask you this, because for people who like basketball and like the NBA but don't really follow what's going on out west, because, with the Western – time change and all that, it's really hard to follow the West Coast. What in the world has happened to the Lakers? And is there any chance that Jeannie Buss will pull these guys out of this funk?
It doesn't appear that there's any chance you're going to. If anybody pulls them out of the funk, it would be Kobe Bryant, but he can't do it all by himself, and that's clear. And he's only going to be around this year and maybe next year. So I think if they're going to have to use the cliched word, rebuild. And if you're a Laker fan, then you're just going to really have to endure some misery, which they have been. I hear from, yeah. I've got good friends out there, and they text me and call me all the time and just say, we are just suffering through misery. And I say, well, welcome to the club. A lot of us have done that for many, many years, and you enjoyed some tremendous seasons. So, you had it when you had it and enjoy it, and now you know what it's like for a lot of other clubs. But they're not used to that kind of thing. That's the thing. Kind of like Chicago when they dropped off for a couple of years. They weren't used to it either. And so I don't know if they can pull out of that funk anytime soon. I think at this point, if you're a Laker fan, you just have to enjoy watching Kobe Bryant and have him shoot as many shots as he does, but that's okay because he's Kobe, and you just have to kind of enjoy that and hope you get a win every now and then.
No, I hear you. I'm gonna give you a shot here, Steve. I'm gonna make a hero out of you. The Redskins play the Bucks today. Who wins?
let me just say this, Bruce, and you're the guy that handicaps these kinds of games.
Sure.
If they lose to this team, then that's a problem because from what I can tell, save for a couple of instances in games against Pittsburgh and maybe one or two other games, Tampa is not a real formidable foe. And if the Redskins, who had been playing pretty good football, if they don't win this game, then they got bigger problems than they think. So I don't know. What's the point spread in this game?
7.5.
7.5?
Yeah.
That's a lot of points for a Redskin team.
Yeah, it is. Well, you
but,
know what?
I think that I would – I mean, I'm not a betting man, but I would almost take the Redskins and give the points. I think they're due for a big day today.
I think you're right because I'm on them for 4 stars. Steve, listen, I can't thank you enough. You know what? We got to talk more often, and I need to come down to the AT&T and see you guys down there. Isn't that what it's called now?
It's Verizon Center.
Jeez, I'm sorry.
Wrong carrier.
Yeah, I got it. Verizon Center downtown. Listen, Steve Buckhantz, the voice of the Washington Bullets and one of my oldest friends. Hey, Steve, you take it easy, buddy. It's great having you on
the show.
Thanks,
guys. Enjoyed being on.
All right, buddy. We'll see you. Steve Buckhantz, everybody. We'll be back in a minute on News Talk 1230 with NFL Football Handicap.
About time.
Yeah, it is.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
For the first time in generations, the dream of homeownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect homeownership. And I'm hoping that being a realtor one day will put food on my table when I'm retired. Clark Judge is on the phone right now. Clark, thanks for being on, buddy.
Always a pleasure, Bruce.
Hey, listen, I just had Steve Buckhantz on. You probably may know Steve. He's the voice of the Wizards. But I can remember we were talking briefly about you because you're from Baltimore originally, right?
Well,
you lived there for a while.
I lived there for a while and then lived out in California, but I've been all over the country, Bruce. They get rid of me every place I go.
Clark is with Hall of Fame Network and comes out every Monday morning with some of the best stuff that you can read all day long. I even like it when you come out with it late on Sunday night because occasionally you'll throw some stuff on there. And I like your polls. We're all, you know, you can be hands-on. And basically help vote on who should be the next Hall of Fame Hall of Famer being inducted into Canton, right?
Yeah, I mean it's going to have an indirect influence because what we do is we put out polls. Three of us, it's Rick Goslin, Ron Borges, and myself, we're on the Hall of Fame Board of Selectors. And we put out these polls, and it gives us an idea of what people out there think. Now, clearly, the decision's made by the 46 selectors in that room, but it's always interesting to hear what people on the outside think. And I'll guarantee you, anytime Ken Stabler's name's involved, he's going to win that poll.
You know, Kenny Stabler was one of the most likable guys you'll ever meet. You never figured this guy for a University of Alabama guy, but he was. He's almost too far south to even be Alabama. He's almost like he's an LSU kind of guy. And I'm not sure if he's from Alabama or if he's from Louisiana. I know he's from way down there. I used to see Kenny at every Super Bowl that was in New Orleans.
I used to see him as well. And, you know, it's funny because, sorry to cut you off, Bruce, but I know one thing. He's Hall of Fame worthy. This is a guy who's in the conversation and should be, and the seniors committee at some point is going to have to address him. I do think Ken Stabler should be in the Hall of Fame. Why he's not is sort of beyond me, but
that's insane.
At some point,
the
seniors committee is going to have to deal with him.
Yeah, Matt was just saying he didn't know he wasn't even in. And Matt's young, though. You know, he's one of these young guys. hey, listen, I'm going to take you right through the NFL with me. I couldn't get a better guy. You are the NFL expert. You're in my opinion, you are the best NFL guy there is. From a standpoint of just knowledge in the big picture. And the big picture is what we're all looking for this time of the year. We're in, what, week 11? You know?
Right.
And if you haven't started figuring it out yet, you might as well just find something else to do. I got to say this, earlier this week, I said something to you 2 weeks ago about Miami, and you weren't too sure about it. And then all of a sudden, they had a good game. Then they had another good game this weekend. Miami is in the conversation now for the playoffs, no question, in the East and the AFC. And they did a great job. Not only that, Buffalo and Miami did what we all thought they'd do. They kept the score down. You know,
that's right. That's right. And I'll tell you why Miami's in the conversation. Because you look at two of their losses, Bruce, one to Green Bay, and then the other one was, I'm trying to think, I'm just drawing a blank, but they lost two in the last minute. And you look at those games, I guess it was last week, wasn't it? Against Detroit, yeah. And so you look at those two losses. One's with 3 seconds to go. Last one, the one last week was 29 seconds to go. Those two games, had they simply been a minute shorter, or in one case 59 minutes, the game had lasted 59 minutes and 56 seconds,
yeah.
If that had been the case, this team would be right there with New England. They'd be right on New England's heels. So that's why you got to pay attention to the Dolphins, because they pushed Green Bay to the mat. They pushed Detroit to the mat. They cleaned New England down there. Now, when they go up to New England, it's going to be a different story. But that said, I think they should be considered as a wild card candidate. Do I think they'd go deep in the playoffs? No, they're not going to. But they've got a defense that's keeping them in ball games. My concern with them, Bruce, is that defense is the same defense that did collapse against Green Bay in the last 2 minutes and did collapse against Detroit in the last 2 minutes.
Well, you know what? And I hear that. And even though they do have a good pass rush, they could use another linebacker or two. And their corners and their safeties are playing really well. Hey, let's go to Houston, Cleveland. Thanks, Matt. We got Cleveland is -3.5. The total's 42. I'm on Cleveland right now for 3 stars. That's an average play for me. I like Cleveland in this game. First of all, they're 4-1 at home, and they are for real, and it's cold and it's snowing there. They have flurries there. What do you think?
I'm with you 100% on this. They're home, cold, plus the X factor, Ryan Mallett is starting for Houston. I don't trust Ryan Mallett as far as I could throw a fork. So I like Cleveland at home here because they've got something going, which is momentum. They've got momentum for them. And they're, as you mentioned, they're 4-1 at home. That one loss was the last second field goal.
Oh, so, I know.
In any case, this is a team that was against Baltimore. This is a team that's playing over its head, and yet they've got a lot going for them. They believe in themselves. Do I think Brian Hoyer is a great quarterback? No, he's not, but he's winning games.
Yep.
And that's all it takes. And now you're going against a quarterback who hasn't played in eons and a guy, honestly, I just don't trust. And when I saw him in preseason games with New England, I didn't like what I saw. I think it's going to be a struggle for Houston. They're going to have to manufacture points defensively because, honestly, I don't know how they're going to get at them offensively.
Yeah, plus their top running back isn't playing.
Foster's out. Right?
Yep, exactly. Minnesota's at Chicago. This is just if Minnesota wasn't playing in this game and I didn't want to see Zimmer do well and watch his defense play, I wouldn't even turn the TV on for this game. I don't even like the game. I can't take it and only take Minnesota +1.5. I just can't do it. But there's no way on God's green earth I'm going with Chicago. They're terrible.
Yeah, I'd avoid this game at all costs. I'm with you again on this one because Mike Zimmer is a good coach, and he's got that team playing hard. Do they have great talent? No, they don't. Teddy Bridgewater is sort of getting baptism by fire. But Chicago's terrible. I mean, Chicago's in a mess right now. Everyone's pointing fingers at each other. No one really knows what's going on. Do I trust Jay Cutler? No, I don't. And then you look at they're at home. They haven't won a game at home, Bruce. They haven't won at home. So it's a home field disadvantage for them. I'd stay away from this game if you were to put a gun to my head and say who's going to win it. I think Minnesota can win it in the last second field goal.
I do, too. I just wish they were getting like 7.5. Anyway,
yeah, I'm with you.
Next game. This is my game. This is my straight cash homie play. Sorry to do this to you. This is a guy that might be in the Hall of Fame one day, Randy Moss. Green Bay is -5.5. And the good news about this game is a game like this only comes around once in a blue moon. That's when a team like Philadelphia, who is, in my opinion, overachieving because they have a really good coach, that has a really good offense, and their defense is playing pretty well, even though they lost to D'Amico Ryans, and that's going to hurt them, especially today. I love Green Bay here. I mean, I could see Green Bay going up 21-0 and having this be, you know, like a 42-28 game, something like that. 5.5 points, that's a joke. That's a 5-star play, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here, Bruce. Green Bay is the pick here, and I like Green Bay big in this game. I agree with you. 5.5 is not big enough. I think they could win this game by 2 touchdowns, maybe more. You're right about Philadelphia's defense is playing better than expected, but they haven't played Aaron Rodgers yet, and he will tear them apart in this environment at Lambeau Field. There's a real comfort zone for Rodgers and that team there. And let's face it, you mentioned Philadelphia. You didn't even mention Mark Sanchez, nor should you, because you got the quarterback whisperer here in Chip Kelly. He does a great job with his quarterbacks. But you're right about D'Amico Ryans. That's the injury that's more of a concern to me. They can get by with Sanchez, but this isn't about getting by. This is about playing tennis with Aaron Rodgers, and he can't do it.
No, I absolutely agree. And let me tell you, Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion, best quarterback in the NFL. We'll be back in a minute on News Talk 1230 WFAS. Hold on to Forrest Clark. We'll cruise through these games when you get back.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BH Sports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back with Clark Judge with Hall of Fame Network and NFL Insider and one of my favorite guys. Shoot, Clark, I was just telling Matt, I could just do games with you for an hour or two every Sunday. The Seattle's at Kansas City. This is going to be a great game, and I'll tell you why. Have you seen Seattle's schedule? There's no way they make the playoffs. If they lose today, there's no way they have they may not win 9 games.
That schedule really is going to get tough for them. And I think the problem here, Bruce, is not only is it going to get tough, they've got to go on the road. And you start with this game. I don't think they win here. Kansas City is playing very, very well. And the thing about Alex Smith is he's not turning the ball over at all. You look at his last, I think, six games. He's got 10 touchdowns, one interception. He's playing very well. That team's playing well. And I will tell you, Bruce, at 6-3, I feel better about this year's Chiefs than I did last year's Chiefs at this time when they were 9-0.
I agree, and I'm taking Kansas City -1 for 3 stars, and I'll tell you why. Marshawn Lynch was unbelievable last week. If you watch Marshawn in the last 2 years, he's an every other week guy. He, I guarantee you, did you see some of the guys he ran over last week? He must be sore as hell this week. I mean, that's just...
Yeah, well, so should some of those guys. It got so bad that if you notice at the end of the game, there was a giant standing near the goal line. He never even made a move towards him. Basically, like, I can't take this anymore. He just let him walk in the end.
Yeah, he said it was a career move. That was funny, actually. Yeah, I'm going to take Kansas City. Do you agree? -1 at home in Arrowhead? I mean, come on. They're 3-1 at home. And Seattle does struggle on the road. You know, they do.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, and also, all right, go ahead,
Matt. Showed up on the injury report. Marshawn Lynch showed up on the injury report, although he practiced Friday, but he showed up as questionable. So I don't know what you're getting from him. You're getting 70% of him, 80%? I don't know. But the fact that they have to go on the road against a very good defense. Now, it's not a great run defense.
Right.
That's the key here. If Lynch is on his game, they could make yards that way. But, yeah, I like KC.
I'll tell you what else I like here. 43.5. You know the one thing Seattle is doing in Vegas? They're making millionaires out of guys playing the over on Seattle. They've always been an under team. And you know how Vegas takes a year or two to kind of react to a certain situation? By losing those defensive guys they lost and the injuries they've lost, Seattle, because of Russell Wilson and because of Marshawn Lynch and because of the fact that he doesn't like to lose, he never quits, he's a 100% kind of guy, they're scoring a lot of points and giving up a lot of points. I'm taking the over for 3 stars, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like it too. I think you're on the right move.
Let's see, Atlanta, Carolina. Let's not even talk about that game. There's better games than that. I'm going to go to the next game.
Bruce,
what?
Here's the one thing. Here's the one thing about Atlanta, Carolina. Everyone's talking about Mike Smith and his job being in jeopardy, which I think it is. They're 3-6, right?
Yeah.
Is there a game out of first place?
Can I tell you what? If they could tackle people, they would be in first place.
Yeah, that division's terrible.
It's the worst division I've ever seen. It's just unbelievable.
I think the NFC South should secede from the NFL.
I think you're absolutely correct. Can I steal that from you?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, great. Next game, Matthew. This is a weird game. You know, Cincinnati.
NFC South.
Speaking of a division that anybody can win, how about the AFC North? I mean, you got Cincinnati, who everybody kind of handpicked to be possibly the guys, along with maybe Baltimore, to win that division at the start of the year. Now, listen to this. They're 7-point underdogs to a team that couldn't tackle anybody and couldn't score. I mean, there are a lot of teams in trouble right now. And I think Cincinnati is one of them. And I think finally, maybe, at the end of this season, we may see Marvin Lewis retire and or be fired. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe, although Mike Brown doesn't like to make changes there. But you're right about this team going backwards. I'm talking about Cincinnati. The reason they're a 7-point underdog is New Orleans doesn't lose back-to-back games. And you look at since 2008, the Saints have lost back-to-back games at home just twice. And you look at New Orleans now coming off that loss last week, and it was an overtime loss to San Francisco. They know what's in line for them. All they've got to do is win the rest of their games at home and try to steal one on the road, and they're golden. 9-7 is going to win that division. Heck, 8-8 may win that division. But you've got a team that's going backwards in Cincinnati, and I agree with you. New Orleans can't tackle anyone. But that said, Andy Dalton can't find anyone. So you got to connect the pass for you to tackle, and he was horrendous the last time. So,
hey,
I like New Orleans in this game.
You know what, Clark? If Andy Dalton was a pitcher in the major leagues, he would be getting TJ surgery because he looked like there was something wrong with his arm, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. But I wouldn't undersell the loss of Giovanni Bernard. I think that really is handicapped these guys since he's been out. They haven't been the same. But honestly, they haven't been the same since the New England game. That New England game was supposed to reveal these guys for what they were, and unfortunately for them, it did.
All right, go ahead, Matthew. I agree with you. I don't know. I think I'm going to leave that one alone because 7 points is scaring me. Washington
is. What about the over-under, though? Look at the.
I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole because New Orleans isn't an automatic lock over anymore. Tampa Bay is at Washington. Redskins
here,
are.
I'll do this one. Next game.
Yeah. No. We're gonna. We're not gonna talk about it. I'm just gonna say if Washington can't win this game by 8, with getting their nose tackle back, everybody healthy, bye week, they're done. You know what I mean?
Well, they're done anyway.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. They're really done. They're done for the fans. They're done for. Look, when I go south, when I leave the studio, I can either go east and go to FedEx Field, or I can go west and go to my couch and watch Red Zone. And I always go west. What do you think about this game? Do you think Washington can cover 7 points? I mean, 7 points? It is Tampa.
Yeah, I do, because Tampa's in backpedal mode. I mean, they can't figure out who their quarterback is. They're losing to games they shouldn't lose. Could they cover the 7? Yeah, they could, because Washington's not any good, but neither is Tampa. Tampa stinks.
Yeah.
And I just think you got two bad football teams here. One, one's worse than the other. That's Tampa. But, that's 7 points. Given 7's a lot. But still, I will say Washington, I would think at some point has got to find something. I hope this is the game. It's an easy win for them.
Yeah.
They should win by more than a touchdown.
No, and they beat up Jacksonville earlier. Let's go to the next game. This is a game I want to talk about. San Francisco, New York Giants. We may be seeing Tom Coughlin's. I know. I'm not going to talk about Denver. They're playing St. Louis. I'll talk about Denver later. I'm not on Denver, by the way. They're -9.5. If you held a gun to my head, yeah, there's no wind. It's indoors. Peyton Manning's playing against a team that can't score any points, and they got a pretty good defense themselves. But San Francisco, didn't they spend all week in Ohio working out?
And
they do that all the time, and they come east and they win two games every time they do that. They're playing
San Francisco is a tough, they're a tough spot here because they're coming east to play a team that's just about had it, okay? About had it, Bruce. But the fact of the matter is they haven't, not yet, and they're talking very tough. And Perry Fuel says, I guarantee a win here. Well, I don't guarantee a win.
Perry Fuel said that?
Yeah, he said this week, he goes, we're going to win this ball game. Well, this is a guy who's threatened with his loss of his job. And this is a guy who's on the firing squad, too. He'll say and do anything. He better respond. His defense better respond. They get Rashad Jennings back. That's good. They get the 49ers that are banged up. That's good. Actually, I think San Francisco did practice this week back out west. But I think they're going to stay in Youngstown afterwards. But anyway, the fact of the matter is the 49ers beaten up a little bit. They come off a tough, tough win in New Orleans. And they can look at this game and say, hey, we can walk our way through it. I don't think so. That line is low for a reason. There are people who think the Giants can win it straight up. They think it can win straight up. I'm not one of them, but I think the Giants are going to push these guys to the map.
Yeah, the money line is 41% on the Giants in Vegas, and that's generally speaking, the people are always wrong. So that might be the side to be on. They have lost 4 in a row. You know what I like in this game? I like the over 44.5. I think no matter what, I think Kaepernick and Eli are going to be moving the ball up and down, because if the Giants win, or they're even in the game, Clark, they're going to have to score 30 points, 20, 28 points.
Bruce, you're absolutely right, because keep in mind, this is a bad, bad defense. They rank dead last in the league, and if they continue at this pace, it'll be the second worst in franchise history. It's a horrible defense. That's why Perry Fuel had to say something this week. What he said was, we're going to win this game. Well, now they're going to go out and have to prove that, but they've got the worst defense in the league to do it.
Yep, I agree. All right, next game. All right, I'm going out on a line here. Oakland, San Diego. I'm taking Oakland to win their first game of the year, and I'm taking them +10. And I'm doing it for a couple of reasons. Number one, San Diego got real soft. Then they took a week off. Are they going to be ready to play in San Diego? Of course they are. They're going to score points. But you know what? Their defense is terrible all of a sudden.
Yeah, it is. It is. They can't get to the quarterback. I like Oakland +10. I like San Diego straight up. San Diego's going to win this ball game, but Oakland will come within 10 points of that. In fact, Oakland nearly beat San Diego when they played earlier this year when Derek Carr threw for 4 touchdown passes. San Diego is in all sorts of trouble defensively, but they'll be able to outscore them. I think in the last 4 games, Bruce, they have 3 sacks total.
I know. They're not putting any pressure on anybody.
No pressure.
No. No,
but Oakland's a bad team.
Yeah,
team going to a place where it has historically been okay.
Yeah.
It's not going to be okay today. The Chargers will beat them.
No, I agree. Next game, and this is the game of the. There are a bunch of good games today. Detroit is at Arizona now. I was on Detroit when they won and when they beat Miami, And this week, I am not on Detroit. I am on Arizona, who is still getting no respect whatsoever from the handicappers in Vegas. Minus one at home, and they're what, 8-1?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 8-1.
How can you turn
the last 18?
How can you turn that away? And by the way, this kid, the quarterback, he's good.
That's the reason. That's the reason line so low is Drew Stanton. They don't trust him, but Drew Stanton does not turn the ball over. If he doesn't turn the ball over here, they win. I agree with you. I like Arizona. Arizona's getting no respect. Comes down to you trust Bruce Arians more than you do the head coach for Detroit. And,
yeah.
And the answer is yeah, I do. Jim Caldwell's a good coach, but Bruce Arians has done miraculous stuff with the Cardinals and before that with the Indianapolis Colts. I love what's going on there. It's a great story.
Yep.
They're home. They've won their last, I think, 9 or last 10 at home, Bruce. It's a great setup for them. And people talk about the Detroit defense, rightly so. It's the number one ranked defense in the league. But this Arizona defense, especially in the fourth quarter, when games won or lost, they've been lights out.
Yeah, they're in shape. And I'll tell you, I don't trust Matt Stafford anyway with a football
either.
In his hand.
I don't either.
All right, New England, next game. This will be the last one we do. New England is at Indianapolis. God, what a great game this is going to be.
Oh,
Indy's minus three. The total, are you ready for this? Highest total I can remember in a long time in the pros, 58 points.
Ooh,
58
wow.
points.
Wow.
Can I tell you what? Take the under no matter what, because I'm just saying, if anybody's playing games with a damn total, it's not going over, it's going under. Minus three. Indianapolis at home. I mean, basically, this is a pick game because 3 points is what the home team is worth here. I think New England's got the better team here. I really do. Indy's offensive line on the right side is scaring me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Andrew Luck, if he wasn't 25 and had the body of Hercules, he'd be dead by now.
Well, Bruce, when's the last time you remember New England being a three-point underdog or an underdog period at any point during the regular season? Last time I remember them being an underdog was in the conference championship game last year. That was Peyton Manning. This isn't Peyton Manning. This is Andrew Luck. And Andrew Luck in his last two games, in his only two games against the Patriots, throwing 7 interceptions.
I got to say,
that's going to
change. I hear you. I'm taking New England too. Clark Judge, people, Hall of Fame Network. Clark, thank you so much. This is a quick shout out right now. 10 seconds, Clark Judge. Hall of Fame Network. Clark, thanks for coming on, buddy.